I found in the conversations, you realize, you know what, I had a pretty good first marriage, so to speak, working with Ozzie Newsome and both Steve Bisciotti and Art Modell. It keeps me close to the game. I think my transition when I left the game would have been tougher had I not had this anchor. They're very specialized. It's a unique talent. They are not football players.
Welcome into the lounge for episode, I don't even know anymore. Yeah. We're getting up there.
We're getting up there. We're not quite 70s. To 100. We're not quite to 100, but we're going to be there at some point probably this season.
I'm going to, when I go back and give this a title, I'll know how high we are. Right. But I think we might be in the 70s.
You know, we have a guest today. A lot of times we get emails from people who say we want to hear from, you know, former players. And somebody who we've heard from fans on more than one occasion that you guys want to hear from is former Ravens head coach Brian Billick.
Yeah.
Super Bowl winner. He's going to be on our preseason broadcast throughout this entire preseason with Jerry Sandusky and Evan Washburn.
Make sure you tune in for that.
On WBAL. They're going to be excellent. And he's somebody that obviously has forgotten more about football than particularly you will ever know.
Well done.
Yeah.
You were really saving that one up.
Oh,
you?
Yeah. I thought about that one for weeks. So anyway, we got a ton of emails over the last week.
Yeah.
And that's good to see. Really encouraging. Happy. This is probably the best. And as always, you guys can email us at the lounge.
The smirk on your face already.
The lounge at ravens.nfl.net. The email reads, wow, Megan's finally off vacation. Weird. I was just starting to think his employment was similar to school teachers. Also.
That would be great. I would love that.
Before you guys start debating, yes, Garrett can win in a fight. It's all about grit and length.
This email, picking the emails from now on.
This email
you're
is just
done on,
speaking
you're not
my language.
Pick the emails this, anymore.
Yeah, like you said, before you guys start debating. He has a question, but the question really isn't important. What is important here is how he ends the question, how he ends the email. You'll like this. I love the lounge. I just thought I'd share my perspective. Take care, and I can't wait for pumpkin beer season.
Yes, I do love that.
You know, pumpkin beer is starting to hit the shelves.
A little early.
It's early. It's early.
For a guy who loves pumpkin beer,
it's
a little early.
Yeah, it's way too early. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
But great email. Appreciate that.
Didn't we get an audio email too?
We did, but you know, we got to get to Brian Billick. We don't have time for all these emails.
Okay.
We got to get to. We got to get to.
But thank
Billick.
You for the emails and keep sending them.
Yeah, we might read that. Use that one next week.
All right. So here we go. So we are happy to be joined by former Ravens head coach Brian Billick, who's going to be in the booth Thursday night. For our first preseason opener against the Washington Redskins. Thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So we got to start out with this story. I don't think you're aware of what happened the other day. Okay, so you come out to Ravens training camp and you're watching practice. And John Harbaugh has a rule. You can't sit down. Reporters aren't allowed to sit down during practice. We have to stand while we watch practice, right? So we're on the far field and you're sitting on the other field watching practice, right? And so Chad Steele, you know Chad well, he sends one of our interns over there on a beeline to come tell this reporter that's sitting over there, you know, you got to stand up or whatever, right? Uh-huh. So David Wolf, our PR intern, he starts huffing it over there, right? This guy is on the go. He goes over there, and I say to Chad, what's going on? He's like, oh, we got some reporters over there sitting. We got to tell John or get him up before John sees, right? And so he calls David Wolf on the phone, right? And he's like, I say, It's Brian. That's Coach Billick over there sitting, by the way. You know?
Now, where was I sitting?
It was by the players' exit entrance onto the field. You
know what
I'm talking about? Yeah. One of those seats over there kind of near
I was
Ozzie.
Doing a radio show.
I say to Chad, I'm like, you know that's Brian, right? That's not just any reporter over there. That's Brian. So he's like, oh, crap, right? So he's trying to get David on the intercom on the walkie-talkie, like, abort the mission, abort the mission, right? But David's not picking up, right? And we're like, does David know what Brian looks like? We're not sure if he's ever met you know?
Right.
So dude, we're all watching with a lot of suspense to see what happens here. He gets close, sees it's you, and does like a flyby, like pretends like
just
nothing ever happened.
And turn.
Just a right turn instead of a left turn.
That's good to know. I'm glad I stirred practice up a little bit.
Exactly. It was some entertainment for us reporters.
I'll have to mention that to Chad. That's great. I wish all I got, you just got to be known the rules. Or is it reporters who don't have a Super Bowl ring.
Maybe that might be qualified
a little bit. There's going to be an out in there somewhere.
Ones who didn't earn one. You know, we have Super Bowl rings, but we didn't exactly earn
a
Super Bowl ring. It's not quite the same ring.
That's good to know. I appreciate that story. That's a great one.
Yeah. So just to start off, just how much have you enjoyed watching Ravens practice?
It's been great. You know, I've done Ravens games before when I was doing games for Fox, and I've been, I think, to every training camp for the last 3 or 4 years in my duties for the NFL Network. I'll come out and do a day, as I did the day you're referring to.
Right.
But obviously, doing the preseason games, I now have immersed myself a lot more in getting to know the roster. Jerry Sandusky, who I'm thrilled to be working with. I think Jerry's one of the best in the business. And Jerry, who's out here every day and visiting with Jerry about what he's seeing and the like.
Right.
It's been fun to kind of reconnect and really get, for the first time, really get to know the roster. Because there's really, unless I'm mistaken, I think Terrell and Sam Cook are the only two players left from when I was here before. So you know, these guys are all new to me for the most part, other than Joe and some of the guys I've met over the last few years. So to kind of jump back into the roster and particularly with the young players, which is going to be really important, obviously, this training camp, like every training camp, to see who can step in, because there are a lot of young players that are going to have to step up and play well for the Ravens to do well this year.
Yanda's the other one.
You're right.
He wasn't the same Yanda
exactly
that he is now back in 2007.
That's right. That's right. I know Marshall because he comes down and he does duck hunting down in my neck of the woods, down in the Eastern Shore.
So. You go out together?
No. I'm not. You don't put a gun in the hands of a fired coach.
That's not a good thing.
That's not a good idea.
That's the rules.
But he loves to come down, and the guy that the fields he shoots in is a good friend of mine.
Nice.
It's awesome. You know, you had some of our staff here come down to your boat in the Eastern Shore. It was Jerry Sandusky, Evan Washburn, some of our staff here.
Right.
But the only thing I wonder about, Mink and I's invitations must have got lost in the mail or something. I'm not sure.
That decision was made above my pay grade.
You know, we enjoy crabs, too.
No, we had a great outing. That was above my pay grade. All comers were welcome. We had a great day.
You have your public relations major in college, right? And so I'm curious how that has kind of affected you both when you were coaching and then now that you're out of coaching, how would you still?
Well, I will tell you, because a lot of people don't know, my first job in the NFL was on a PR staff.
Wow.
I was at Brigham Young University. I was a graduate assistant. I bounced around a couple training camps as a player. Didn't make it in San Francisco and Dallas. And the opportunity, the former assistant PR director in Dallas got the head job in San Francisco. And Bill Walsh, in typical Bill Walsh fashion, was a forward-thinking, before Chad Steele was Chad Steele, right? I mean, he wanted an assistant that had kind of a playing background, that could relate to the players a little bit better. And this was before you had player programs, guys. So he had the vision for, I want a guy on staff that kind of fits that mold. So George Heddleston, who was the director of public relations, offered me the job, and I was unprepared for it. I was graduate degree in communications, but I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
But saw it as an entree to the league and couldn't pass it up. And I will tell you, the 2 years that I was assistant PR director in San Francisco were huge for me because we were very small organizationally. So I was exposed to every aspect of the organization. You think at the time there were three of us, George Heddleston, myself, one young woman named Delia Newland, who was our secretary, who knew far more than I did, even though I was the assistant. We were PR, publications, suite sales, community relations.
Holy cow.
I mean, how many people is that now in the organization?
That's like 30 people.
Wow. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. And then Bill also knew that I wanted to eventually maybe end up in coaching. He and John McVay, who was our general manager, they were great in terms of kind of including me. And so I'd go advance a game. They don't even do that anymore. I'd go to where we're playing that week and, you know, make sure the hotels and all the buses and everything, and then do all the radio and TV work leading up to it. And they would say, we'd play Seattle. So I'll go to the University of Washington and watch this practice. And then write up this player, which was great. I really give them great credit for you know, giving me that entree to from personnel to across the board. It was an incredible 2-year tutelage for me.
So did you know then, like, did you think that you were going to be more, you know, little slappies, nobodies like us? Or did you know that you were going to be a coach or at least have
No, I'd always known I wanted to go into coaching, but this was an opportunity to get exposed at the NFL level. I think I knew I would get back into coaching, but like anything, the longer you're there, you could see, you know, something, well, maybe head towards the general manager aspect of it or whatever.
Right.
And then a coaching opportunity came my way down to San Diego State. But those 2 years were, and you talk about how it translated then going forward when I became a head coach, having been exposed to all of these jobs and realizing in the organization just how many people it takes served me very, very well.
Did you, when you were a head coach, did you enjoy the media aspect of it, or did you hate the media? Because every coach is a little different.
Oh, sure. I enjoyed the give and take.
Okay.
You know, as I always used to say, if you want to say Brian Billick is as screwed up as Hogan's goat, fine. I get that. But if you're going to say, nah, he's screwed up because, and you're going to list, okay, now we're going to go round and round.
Right.
Because now I'm going to challenge you a little bit. If I don't agree with your list, if you say it's because of X, Y, and Z, then we're going to go back and forth. And I understood, look, I may not give you what you want. I'm going to fill your notebook, and I'm going to give you your 30-second or 60-second clip.
All right.
It may not be what you want, but I'm gonna give you what you need to do your job.
Right. I think reporters like that. I mean, that's a reporter's dream.
We're looking to fill in the quotes.
Right, as long as they have something to work with, I think they're generally pretty
happy.
And
that's the key you learn as a head coach is, okay, how can I do my job, let them do their job, and make this as least intrusive as possible.
Right.
I think sometimes, and I counsel players the same way, sometimes because they have such an aversion to it, that they don't realize you're just making your job tougher. You can make who does a better post-game interview or interview at all than Tom Brady and Peyton Manning? And who tells you absolutely less than those guys?
It's a lot of words without giving you any information.
But they knew how to look. If I try to hold it at arm's length, I had this conversation with Jay Cutler, who just wasn't getting it, going, look, I know that's not something you're comfortable doing. You can make it all go away with a lot less effort if you just play the game,
give a little,
do that. Right. But the more you push back, the harder it becomes and the more distracting it becomes.
Yeah. What is it about broadcasting that you really love now?
Well, one, it keeps me close to the game. Mm-hmm. I think my transition when I left the game would have been tougher had I not had this anchor. In doing games for Fox was phenomenal. Can you imagine getting to sit in virtually every facility in the league, your quote-unquote opponents, and watching how they did their job, how they conducted practice? Some of them even invited me into meetings. Right. It was I'm done coaching, of course, but I said if I were ever to go back, I would be a better coach just for that experience of those 5 years of sitting in a different facility every Friday getting ready for those games. But it keeps me close to the game, which obviously is something that, you know, I don't have those withdrawals necessarily. Mm-hmm. And have, I think, a big enough view of the game that I think I can lend something to it, you know, in terms of what I'm seeing after having been in this business for 40, 45 years. You tend to see things a little clearer.
Right.
From the perspective I have now, because you're not drawn into the emotion and the grind of what being an NFL coach or any kind of coach, for that matter, has to deal with, and it's a perspective that I enjoy.
I was going to ask you about this in a little bit later, but you kind of opened this can of worms, so I'll ask you about it now. But I remember asking you at the Super Bowl in 2012, would you ever want to coach again? And I remember you told me at the time, NFL wants two things to coaches right now, young and cheap.
Right.
And I'm neither.
You're a man. <I'm neither. laughs>
And so was there a point in time when you were done coaching that you thought, I'm probably going to end up coaching again? And at what point did it shift from, I'm out of coaching?
No, initially I thought I would go back to coaching and didn't know what that time frame would be. And what I found was, and there were two specific opportunities, a couple conversations, but two opportunities that could have become opportunities, I think. But I found in the conversations, you realized, you know what, I had a pretty good first marriage, so to speak, working with Ozzie Newsome and both Steve Bisciotti and Art Modell. And you have an idea of what a winning organization would look like. Doesn't mean it has to be my way. doesn't have to, you know, my way or the highway, and it has to be, I'm not saying that, but a sense of, do they know what they're looking for? Do they, I say today, there's two things after all these years and all the experience that I have, there's two things I know I absolutely don't know. I don't know what a catch is.
Welcome to the club.
And I don't know what they're really looking for in a head coach, because it has changed. It's become more of a general manager's league, in my opinion. That's not good or bad. It just is. Mm-hmm. And what they're looking for from the head coach and the job, it has grown and changed because of social media, because of all the demands. It just like we talked about, you know, what before was three people. Is now 30 or 40 people in the organization. So it has changed. And as a head coach, you have to be able to deal with all those elements.
Right. What's more fun, do you think, being an NFL head coach or not being an NFL head coach?
Well, right now, and being able to chase around my grandkids and spend time on my boat, right now it feels pretty good. No one's trying to run me out of town. But when you're in it and when you're living it, it's the best. Because it's the challenge, you've worked your entire life for it. You don't realize until you get out of it, looking back, some of the things that you were looking. I mean, this job can kill you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can. And we've seen whether it be a Gary Kubiak that leaves mm-hmm. the league. I mean, it is. That's the hardest thing. And people always ask, what's the hardest thing about being an NFL head coach? It was the fact that not that other jobs aren't tough, but there's not a day. It is 365 days. I won't say it's 24/7, 365.
Right.
But there's not a day in your year that you're not dealing with something to do with your team. Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge. You love it. Mm-hmm. But it is a grind. And so when I say it's a young man's game, so to speak, and you got to respect, obviously, a Bill Belichick and a Pete Carroll and the guys that are doing it that are even older than I am. But it is a grind, and it's a grind. For me right now, it's probably better suited for a younger man.
I gotta read this quote and jump ahead again here. But Steve Bisciotti a week or so ago had a fan forum with all of our fans, right? And Goodell came down for it and all that. And he had a funny quote that really struck me, right? And he said he was talking about the vocal minority, right? And the whole Kaepernick situation and all that stuff, and how you have to watch out for that. So his quote was, "When I fired Billick 9 years ago, it sounded like 90% of the people in Baltimore wanted me to fire him until I fired him, and then I found out 80% of the people thought I was an idiot." Yeah. Just your take on that. Yeah.
And Steve's very insightful that way, you know, and because you recognize, it is true that he's right. Probably they wanted to run my butt out of town. Since then, the very people, and I'm in the airport all the time coming and going, and people never fail to come up. And it's humbling. Just, oh, coach, it's great.
Positive.
I have become the smartest guy in America. I really have. And these are people that wanted to run me out of town. There was and I will give Steve credit for that. When we went through that transition, Steve said, "You're going to find that the way people respond to you is going to surprise you. How much they love you and the regard they're going to have for you." And the guy had just fired me, so I'm thinking, okay, yeah, right. But he was right in terms of the way people, there is something, it's like the backup quarterback, so to speak.
Right.
And so the perspective you have that is bigger now and be able to step away from it. And the fact that I stayed in the area, that I still live in the area, I think has a little something to do with it. But he's right. I mean, because the fans, you know, and obviously what they were going through with the Kaepernick and the situation and people's different opinions. You do have to be responsive to the fans, but it's also like, you know, all those people want me, you're yelling for me to go for it when it's 4th and 1 on my own 20 right. against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, I want you here with my butt on the sideline when we don't get it, okay? Because it's not as good idea then as it was, yeah, go for it. But you come to recognize that, particularly in this business, you look through the prism. There's only one lens. It either works or it doesn't. Doesn't matter how well thought out, how well deserving, or whatever a decision may have been. If it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're the village idiot. Yeah.
How has it changed, and how does it feel when you walk into the building now? Because you still obviously have relationships with a lot of people here, Kevin Byrne, Ozzie Newsome, Steve. Like, when was the first time you came back into the building?
Yeah, it was interesting. I had done I was doing a Ravens game when I was with Fox.
Okay.
So that was the very first time.
The next year?
No, this was probably, I'm trying to remember, maybe th- 3 years removed.
Okay.
To where I actually did a Ravens game. And so, yeah, coming back into the building to do the Friday, you know, production meeting like you do. So there's certainly clearly enough players still that I was familiar with. And, of course, still had a relationship with many of the people in the organization. It was great. And I credit them both here and at the stadium. People have been great. They really have. I must say, I've never since had a single incident. And it's surprising because you would have thought, whether, again, it's about town, whether it's at the airport, whether it's that someone, you know, whether they've been imbibing too long or whatever.
Not a single one.
I have not had a single negative incident where someone felt they wanted to vet because I cost them. They bet us on the margin and lost some bet or whatever.
They're so angry because you won a Super Bowl.
And it's like I say, it's humbling and it's gratifying. And this is home for me. And so to be able to come back and to do the preseason games.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled to death. Someone asked the other day, they go, well, why did it take so long? Why are you doing it now? I said, because they asked. This is the first time they've asked. So sure, this is great.
When you walk through the halls, does it feel like, man, it was just yesterday?
It does. Oh, and driving in.
So it feels like yesterday. It doesn't feel like that was forever
ago. Making that turn in.
Really?
And then you're walking up and down, and particularly walking down the corridor that leads to the coaching wing that still has, you know, they have these beautiful bronze plated figurines at the end of each hall.
Right,
and that there's a kicker. That's the image I had to see was a kicker as I'm walking into the coach's wing, going, put a football player. Okay? I don't want a damn kicker.
I'm sure Stover and Tucker see it differently.
No. They know how I feel about them. They're very specialized. It's a unique talent. They are not football players. It's a very special thing. And I had the best with Matt Stover, the absolute best. Yeah. They don't train like that. They don't prepare like that. They don't have meetings like a football player. It's different.
What can you say about, on a more serious note, just after a team doesn't make the playoffs in back-to-back years, after the excellence, the bar here is high, you well know. What are the conversations like right now? What's going through people's heads when the pressure is high?
Well, we'll start the proverbial coaches on the hot seat. In my work for the NFL Network, mm-hmm. We know the first week it'll be okay.
Yeah.
And they'll put that list out there.
Right.
My point would be, unless your name is Bill Belichick, I'm not sure there's any coach in the National Football League mm-hmm. that is sitting back going, oh, I'm good to go here. I'm set. That's just not what life in the National Football League is about. We were just talking about in a production meeting how coordinators' jobs have become more intensified because we fired coordinators in preseason because of expectations.
Wow.
Around the league, we've seen that.
Yeah.
There'll be regrettably two or three guys, if history holds, during the course of the season that it happened. That's just life in the National Football League. So when you're in the middle of it, you kind of hold it at arm's length. Look, I understand the circumstances around me, but I got to stay focused on the things attendant to us being successful. Mm-hmm. And if I get too drawn into that, the discussion about it, the negativity about it, even to the point where you're going, well, I got to address it with my players, that's a mistake.
Right.
Just do your job. Hold that stuff at arm's length. That is the business side of this business. Mm-hmm. The players understand totally that, hey, I may be gone next year. Right. My contract may not be up. They may cut me. The players live in that world constantly. So there's no sympathy there that the head coach is maybe feeling a little pressure because they feel that every day.
How has your guys' relationship changed and evolved over time? I mean, because you guys are in a unique position, obviously. You've both coached here. You've both won a Super Bowl here. There's two guys that have done it, and you are the only two. So you are the only ones that know what it takes to do that, the pressure that comes along with it.
Shared experiences. Yeah. It's why movie stars marry other movie stars.
Right.
Because they're the only ones that really know
what
that world is about. And John and I have had a great relationship. I can't say we've sat and had lengthy conversations. But whenever we've interacted with one another, and he's always been very gracious, and has asked some questions at times about what I thought of a given player they had or whatever, given my being around the team, around training camp or even the games themselves. But it's been a great relationship.
Nice.
Let's talk a little bit more about training camp and preseason. Just at this point, when you're going into the first preseason game, what is a head coach looking for? What's really important in this game? And then if you could talk a little bit about this team, guys, you're looking at right now.
Yeah, well, it's dual purposes because obviously right now it has to be about evaluation. I can't let a good football player get away from this building if we can help it,
right?
And you don't want to make a mistake of thinking a player can't play simply because he's still confused or out of his element and could actually develop to be a pretty good player.
Right, so, some of these guys still are at this point. They're still swimming, right?
Absolutely. So evaluation is job one. And, oh, by the way, we've got to get the rest of the team ready with all the changes that we're making and the things we're doing for the regular season opener against Cincinnati. So you have these dual priorities sometimes work in direct contrast to one another. And that's the tough part for a coach in, all right, are we in evaluation stage here or do we need to move forward in terms of what we're, how we're strategically or tactically?
Right.
With this team right now, obviously the toughest thing is a lot of injuries. And and if you follow around the league, every team has injuries during training camp. Ravens have been hit pretty good. So the challenge of making sure that we are staffed in the right areas. The offensive line has been hit. And that's the hard thing. If you visit with Ozzie, as I did last week, what keeps Ozzie up at night is where are the injury is going to come. And typically it comes at a single position.
Right.
So you got to have that ever-ready list ready.
It always seems to be cornerback here,
slot
too.
Slot corner.
Well, and that, although, although right now you got to feel like, and I think that had a little something to do with signing Brandon Carr, because he's been such an iron horse from that regard. The secondary looks really solid right now, and but it doesn't take much. But the depth there looks pretty good. Not only the frontline depth, that you have a Ladarius Webb that can fill in.
Right.
It sounds like Candy is going to be back at some point, which would be a positive. So from that standpoint, yes, that at the corner position or at the secondary position looks, for the first time in a few years, very, very solid. Now, the offensive line, the tight end position. So it just moves. It's a, it's like playing whack-a-mole. You know, all of a sudden, where is it going to pop up now? Right now, probably the biggest concern is how the offensive line is going to – you saw the signing of obviously Austin Howard.
Right.
Has a lot to do with they want to see how Hurst continues to develop. They got to see how Nimbot and Wesley, are they going to continue on? Could they be our swing tackle?
Right.
How's Jensen doing at center? Do we need not only, you know, because obviously Marshall Yanda and Alex are going to be fine, but how are we doing at center? And we need that swing guy.
Right.
Do we have that guy on campus, or is that going to come from someplace else? So that's probably right now the offensive line is probably where the biggest questions are with regards to, are we good with what we have on campus, or do I need, are we going to be looking to, you know, round up the usual suspects?
Who's the one guy that you can remember when you were coaching that you were having some serious conversations like, this guy's on the bubble, we're not sure if he's going to make the 53, you're batting it back and forth, and you kept him on the roster, and you're like, oh, thank God we didn't cut that guy.
Well, I'll give you one better. It was John Jones, who was a tight end.
Okay.
And particularly now that you don't have the intermediate cutdown period.
Right, now it's just straight now, to 53.
So that week, that last game, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
It's because it's a... And again, as much as you work with these guys, you know them, it's all about numbers and this guy and... You know, you know them in that capacity. Well, so it's a cast of thousands when it comes to cut down day. And the scout guys will bring a guy in and say, Coach, you know, plop a guy down.
You're right.
And so I'm sitting and talking to a guy. Turns out to be John Jones. And I'm talking to him about, yeah, it's unfortunate side of the business, yada, yada. And he's got a look on his face like he's really shocked. And I'm thinking, this guy should not be this surprised. Because he should know. And then I realized, this is the wrong guy. They brought me the wrong guy. John Jones was going to make our football team.
And you're here.
So now I look like the village idiot because I've gone through this whole spiel about what it is to be cut and this, that, and the other. So I got to turn around. I go, John, now you know what it feels like to be cut. You've made this football team, but I don't want to ever have to have this conversation with you. You got to work hard. You get your head in that playbook. Now get out of here and get back. You know. So I turned it into a motivational motivational speech.
That's being on your toes right there.
Oh, well, you had to be.
And who's one guy that you did cut that you then regretted later?
Oh, gosh, there's probably so many. You know, obviously James Harrison is the one that's got, given the career that he had. Mm-hmm. And also, as by way of disclaimer, Steelers cut him too right. at some point.
Yes.
He was just such a raw talent.
Yeah.
And you knew the talent was there. We were deep at the position. We'd hoped we could get him in developmental squad. Wasn't going to happen. But you knew this guy had talent if you could just wait long enough to give him that chance. Yeah. I think he went to Pittsburgh, got cut there, and then came back and obviously has had what's probably a Hall of Fame career.
Didn't he go to like NFL Europe or something? Somebody said that like he didn't want to come back from NFL Europe or something like that.
Great time.
There was like some kind of flight thing and he was tired of bouncing back, something like that, I remember hearing.
So that's when you go, that's how smart you were, Coach. James Harrison.
It's like Brady going to the sixth round, everyone can look at that. So you brought this up in your interview with Coach Harbaugh last week, and there's been a lot of talk with this defense. You know, people look at this defense, and the players are not shying away from it. There's words like historic, legendary, those kinds of things. Well, you coach a pretty historic defense back in 2000. What do you think when you hear those kinds of words that are thrown around?
Oh, it's great. You know, I saw Brandon Williams say, we're going to be as good as the 2000.
Yeah, right.
And I'm thinking, slow your roll on that one. You're going to be pretty good, and that's great that you covet that. Those guys were so young when it happened, they forget just how good that team.
Yeah.
When you look at that team is the number one scoring defense in the history of the league, and the next closest, that's to me, when you look at records, it's how many people are around it.
Right.
That record will never be broken.
Right.
And the league's changed to a degree. I understand that. But that record will never be broken. So that's pretty substantial. On a year when you won the Super Bowl, that was the thing I remember when we were on this target to be the greatest single season scoring defense in the history or whatever, people kept saying, yeah, but it doesn't count if you don't win the Super Bowl. Kind of dismissing us. We said, okay, boom, we'll go win the Super Bowl.
Because
you remember when the Bears did it, the record we were breaking was in a year that the Bears did not go to the Super Bowl.
Mm.
So that was always the qualifier.
Right.
So that's going to be my qualifier. Okay, you got to do that and you got to win a Super Bowl.
You're going to have it both ways.
Having
here.
Said that, this is pretty good defense.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the great thing about those defenses leading up even to the second Super Bowl is you had those huge anchors at every level. You had Haloti Ngata. We, of course, had Tony Siragusa and Sam Adams. You have a Terrell Suggs on the outside. We had Peter Boulware and Mike McCrary. We had a Ray Lewis at the second level. We had a Rod Woodson and then a Ed Reed at the back end.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to embarrass those guys and try to put them in those categories just yet. Brandon Williams in the middle is pretty darn good.
Yep.
That's a dominant pressure. Terrell Suggs coming off the edge. I don't know if Terrell can be a double sack, double-digit sack guy again, but he'll be close.
Right.
CJ looks really solid at the linebacker. Good. And now you've got two really good safeties with Weddle and Jefferson, and solid at the corner. So I think you've got enough anchors in all the key areas that this defense has a chance really to be one of the best in the league.
You brought up Ray Lewis. All three of us have heard plenty of Ray Lewis speeches, motivational talks over the years. Some, you know, I don't know where Ray's going with some of them. How many times would Ray get on a spiel and you would be in a team meeting and you would just say, I don't know what he's talking about, but I'm just going to let him go?
Absolutely.
I have no idea what he's saying.
But Ray was strategic about that. He would come to me maybe three times a season for the pregame, saying, Coach. And he was always very respectful. That's the thing I always appreciate about Ray Lewis. Because if anybody could have kind of really acted any way you wanted to, it would be Ray Lewis. But he goes, Coach, I'd like to. I said, you're on, man, go. My best Ray Lewis motivational talk is we're playing the year we set the all-time scoring record and total number of shutouts. We're playing Cleveland Browns. We're playing in Baltimore. And they're terrible. I think they got Spurgeon win at quarterback or something. So my guys are feeling it. We're getting a shutout.
Right.
And I used to run the scout teams. That was my way of touching every player and also knowing what the schemes were. So I ran the offensive scout team. I face our defense every day, and I could see them going, God, these guys are on it. They're going to kick butt this week. Because they saw a shutout.
Right.
Well, Cleveland comes out first series, start on the 16-yard line, go 84 yards, length of the field for a score.
Right.
And we're just stunned. So I walk towards the – they're coming off the field, and I'm walking towards them. I'm going to do my head coaching thing. Ray comes off. Ray's the first one off. He looks at me, and he says, don't say a word. I got it. So I, like, turn left to the Gatorade and get out of the way. I don't know what he said to those guys. We gave up 84 yards on the first drive. We gave up 120 yards total on the day.
Oh! 40 more yards.
They regretted scoring that touchdown because it was a total ass whooping.
That's awesome. I'm curious. How many games do you think, more games / Super Bowls, do you think you would have won if you had Joe Flacco as your quarterback back then?
Oh, that's not. That's a hard one. I will say this. I do, and it was that way in Minnesota as well. For whatever reason, yeah. I had gone in Minnesota. We went through a litany of quarterbacks from Trent. I had Warren Moon. Some great ones. I had Warren Moon. I had a Brad Johnson.
Yeah.
Sean Salisbury. I mean, I had Jim McMahon. I mean. And obviously went through a litany of quarterbacks here. I do look with a bit of an envious eye the idea of, boy, how great would it have been to gone through a stretch mm-hmm. where I started each year knowing I was set at the quarterback position.
Right.
That aspect, I would have loved to have coached Joe.
Right.
But to just have, to know that there was stability at that position going forward, transitioning from one year to the next, is a gift I was never given. that would have been fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Coach. Well, I think that's all the questions we've got
guys,
for you.
Very
Coach
good.
Willick.
Lots of fun.
Look forward to listening to you on the broadcast.
We're looking forward to it as
all
well.
Right. Thank you.
All right,
thank
guys.
You. Thank you to Coach Billick as he exits the room here. Awesome perspective, man. It's pretty cool. You really do see that after you get out of coaching, you have this broader view of things.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, and like I said to him, I mean, he's just in this unique situation where there's two guys that have won Super Bowls as Baltimore Ravens head coaches, and it's him and Coach Harbaugh, and they share that bond. And I think it's cool that he's back here. You know, I don't think that's not the case at every team.
No.
That a coach has success, then gets fired, and then still has a close relationship with the organization. I mean, his fans are going to be in for a treat when he's on a preseason broadcast. I think that's going to be something that's, you know, really, really appealing, and it's great to sit down with him and talk and share some stories. He's a great storyteller.
Yeah. Glad he didn't go down the journalism route like me and you.
Right.
Well, you think you'll ever be a head coach one day?
That's what I was going to say.
Super Bowl winning head coach?
Right. We have the communications background at some point. You never know.
They
you never
call
know.
Us up.
They may call us up and say, you want to go to the advance for the Steelers this week? Sure. Coach, I'm ready. Put me in.
Then a couple years later, coaching the best defense of all time.
Holding up a Lombardi.
That's going to be you?
Yeah, that's definitely going to be me. You never know.
The closest you'll ever come to the Lombardi was holding it on the back of the airplane on our way back from Super Bowl 47.
That was still pretty cool.
That ain't bad.
That was pretty cool.
That ain't bad. But anyway, thank you to everybody for listening. We're going to keep the good guests coming, man. We had Roger Goodell, then Brian Billick. We have a lot in store for this podcast.
A-list.
So keep tuning in, and as always, you can email us at thelounge@ravens.nfl.net. Give us the 5 stars on Apple. We haven't on iTunes. We haven't really begged for that recently.
Yeah, we want to go back to begging.
We're not above begging.
Nope, not at all.
Not by any means. So thanks once again, and we'll be back with you next week.